going to read from the Bible. You have it in the center of your order of service. I'm going to read the verses 9 through 20 of the third chapter of the book of Romans, which was a letter which the Apostle Paul wrote to the church at Rome 2,000 years ago. He's speaking here about the relationship between God and man, and the relationship in particular between God and the Jews, but it's applicable to us, as you'll see as we read it. What then? Are we Jews any better off? No, not at all. For we have already charged that all, both Jews and Greeks, are under sin. As it is written, none is righteous, no, not one. No one understands, no one seeks for God. All have turned aside, together they have become worthless. No one does good, not even one. Their throat is an open grave. Their mouth, they use their tongues to deceive. The venom of asps is under their lips. Their mouth is full of curses and bitterness. Their feet are swift to shed blood. In their paths are ruin and misery. And the way of peace they have not known. There is no fear of God before their eyes. Now we know that whatever the law says, it speaks to those who are under the law, so that every mouth may be stopped and the whole world may be held accountable to God. For by works of the law, no human being will be justified in his sight. Since through the law comes knowledge of sin. Amen, and may God bless to us the reading of this portion of his word tonight. Well, it is good to have you here tonight. And if it's the first time you've come to a church, then good on you. It's not easy to come into a place that you don't know well. Or don't know anything about. It's unfamiliar to you. But we believe that God has brought you here and that he will speak to you through his word. Why do bad things happen to good people? September the 11th, or 9/11, has become a date in modern history which is synonymous with horror. Those of us who are old enough, and that's most of us, to remember that day in 2001, we will never forget the images that played out live on our television screens as a series of coordinated terrorist attacks hit the United States of America, resulting in the death of 2,973 people from over 70 countries. That is, excluding the 19 terrorists. On that morning, 19 Al-Qaeda terrorists hijacked 4 commercial passenger jet liners. 2 of them were flown deliberately into the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center in New York, killing everyone on board and over 2,000 people in those buildings which collapsed within 2 hours. The suicide hijackers crashed a third airliner into the Pentagon in Arlington, Virginia, just outside Washington, D.C., again killing everybody on board and some people within the building. The fourth plane crashed in a field near Shanksville in rural Pennsylvania, after some of the passengers and the flight crew attempted to retake control of the aeroplane. The destination was Washington, D.C., and again, no one survived. Those are the very basic facts behind the statistics of that day. But behind those statistics were the lives of real people. Men who kissed their wives good morning and goodbye for the day, possibly hugged one of their children on their way out the door to work, heading off as any other day in life would have it. But they wouldn't return home. Never again would they get into bed beside their wives. Never again would they hug their children. Women who had set off from home, they had gone in order to help provide for their families. And those lives as well were ended in an instant. Who will ever forget the scenes of people jumping from the Twin Towers, hundreds of feet up, to their deaths on the pavement below? Why? Why did so many innocent people have to die? Yes, we can rightly blame it on those men who hijacked those planes and flew them deliberately, taking the lives of those almost 3,000 people. But you could ask the question, if there is a God, why did he not stop them? If there is a God who is in control of all things, why did he not, by a simple word, bring down those men before they had the opportunity to hijack those airplanes? What then about the great tragedies for whom no one is responsible except God? Boxing Day 2004, the second largest earthquake ever recorded on a seismograph at a magnitude of between 9.1 and 9.3, shook the surface of the earth off the west coast of Sumatra in Indonesia. It caused the entire planet to vibrate by about 1 centimeter. It was a colossal physical event. It triggered numerous earthquakes around the world, as far away as Alaska. The most devastating aspect of it, though, was the series of tsunamis which it triggered along the coast of most of the land masses bordering the Indian Ocean. Huge tidal waves, some over 100 feet high, overwhelmed huge coastal regions of Indonesia, Sri Lanka, India, Thailand, and claimed the lives of an almost unbelievable 230,000 people. 230,000 people wiped off the face of the earth, literally in a matter of moments. Now surely if there is a God, and he is a God who loves everyone, as we are often told, then why or how could he let such a thing happen? Think of all those thousands and thousands and thousands of innocent men, women, young boys, young girls, boys and girls, toddlers, infants in arms, whose lives were snuffed out in an instant. How can it be fair? Why do bad things happen to good people? We haven't even thought about individuals who suffer hardship in their lives. Good, decent, honest people. Hard-working. People who have never given anybody any difficulty or any hassle. People who are a pleasure to be with. People whose company are a joy. And yet we hear of some terrible, terrible illness striking them down. you begin to wonder and think, is God real? And if he is real, why on earth does he do it? There's enough bad people in the world. Can he not take them out and leave the good people alone? The answer to the question, why do bad things happen to good people, is a very simple answer. It's amazingly simple. The problem is, it's an answer which every one of us finds totally unacceptable. It's an answer that we just will not accept. Here is the answer. Bad things happen to good people because there are no good people. Which means that there are only bad people. And for justice to be fair, bad people must receive what they deserve. Now, I know that's a startling statement. But I'm going to ask you to hear me out. I want to ask you to give God the opportunity to say his peace to you tonight. I'm sure you would consider yourself to be a fair and a reasonable person. Well, if you believe that God is responsible, whether because of a failure to act to prevent bad things happening, or he is responsible because he does not prevent natural disasters, whether they are large or whether they concern just one person. If you believe that God is responsible for these things, or at least culpable because of his failure to act in these events, then I think it's fair and reasonable to ask you to let God have his say. Let him speak to you concerning why he says there are no good people. If we're going to charge God with a failure, then it's acceptable, is it not, to give God the opportunity to at least state his case. We would do that with a human being. Why not do it with the God who gave us life? And I want to unfold from the Bible tonight what God has to say in defense of this statement. And I want to do so under three headings. First, there are no good people. Second, bad people deserve what they get, namely punishment. And thirdly, there was one good man who got what he did not deserve. There is no good people. Bad people deserve what they get, punishment. And there was one good man who got what he did not deserve. There are no good people. The reason why the question, why do bad things happen to good people, is that when things happen in people's lives, we ask that question, and in asking that question, we show that we have a critical error in our assumption-making process. When we say, why do bad things happen to good people? There is an assumption there. And that assumption is that there are good people. But the barometer or the measuring stick that we use to determine whether a person is good or bad, is calibrated by us. And because it is calibrated by us, it is flawed. It is broken. And no matter what call we make on a person, whether they are good or bad, we will always, always get it wrong. We will get it wrong because the measuring stick which we use to govern whether a person is good or a person is bad in our mind has an inbuilt error in it. It's a flawed measuring stick. Think, for example, what has happened in the world in the last 70 years. At times during the last 70 years, it has been deemed acceptable and good by the majority of inhabitants in certain nations to put other good people to death purely because they did not fit ethnically. Millions of good people stood and tacitly gave silent approval to the deaths of thousands of other good people because they didn't fit ethnically. You need no clearer indicator that the human barometer which judges between good and bad feels than the horribly grotesque events that took place at Auschwitz, Dachau, Rwanda, Srebrenica, and multiple other places. Millions of good people stood back and allowed thousands of other so-called good people meet their death because they didn't fit ethnically. And if you'd have asked them about those who put those good people to death, they'd have said they're just brave soldiers doing their business. And that's a very, very simple illustrator of how the measuring stick or the barometer that human beings use to decide who is good and who is bad is incredibly, incredibly flawed. We today say that a man who takes a child and molests that child in a totally unacceptable way is bad. But believe you me, there are parts of the world that will in the history of the world find that acceptable. Because they have found that acceptable in the past. Unacceptable as we think about it here and now today. And that shows us again that the way that we think about good and bad is flawed. We don't know what is good. We don't know what is bad. We go with the majority. And if the majority say it is good, then we think it's good. If the majority think it's bad, then we think it's bad. The problem with that is that the majority changes its mind. If you look at the history of the world over the centuries, things that were bad 100 years ago and were terrible and were seen to be destructive to family life are now seen as totally acceptable. Things that men were not allowed to do were deemed as criminal because their activities broke up the family relationship. And today, it's totally acceptable. In fact, if you say or even hint it is wrong, then you are the one that is ostracized. You're the one that's hung out to dry. So nobody can say that a society will always stay consistent in what it believes is good and what it is bad. It doesn't. It doesn't. It changes. And if we think that we would stand up and say it doesn't change and we would find it right and wrong, we wouldn't. Because we would go along with the tacit approval of the silent majority. So when it comes to discerning who is good and is bad, we can't look to our own hearts and we can't look to each other because we are intrinsically flawed. We need to go out with ourselves. We need to go to an external source, a source who exists out with that flawed system of man. And I put it to you tonight that the one whom we often blame for allowing bad things to happen to good people is the only external source who has got the right answer. What God says about man in the Bible is very, very clear. As far as God is concerned, there is no one who is good. Look at the inside of your order of service, please. These words we sang together in Psalm 14. And here they are repeated in Romans chapter 3. It speaks of how God looked into the earth and considered to see who was good and who was bad. And God's very clear conclusion is that there is no one who is righteous. Righteous is another word for do those who do right. Verse 11, there is no one who understands, no one who seeks for God. All have turned away. Not the majority, not many, but all have turned away. Together they have become worthless. No one does good. And then, as if to emphasize the fact, because he knows the heart of man and the capacity of man to read things into words that are not there, he expresses it in a different way. He says, not even one. He leaves no doubt at all about the possibility of there being one single human being who is good. In the eyes of our Creator, there is not one single solitary human being who has ever lived who is good. According to his flawless thinking, according to his perfect mind, when God looks at all mankind, the one thing that is the common denominator that runs through all of mankind is that mankind is united in the fact that there is no one, not one single solitary person, who does good. In the eyes of God, and it's only the eyes of God that matter, in God's eyes, every single human being who has lived, in the past, in the present, and in the future, are corrupt. The character is not straight. You see that in verses 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. I wonder if as you read those you thought of people who are, in our eyes, extremely bad. But all those things can be applied to you and to me. Who of us has never told a lie? Who of us has never denigrated another person's character? Verse 14, full of curses and bitterness. Is there anybody in this building tonight who can honestly say during their life they've never spoken one single bad word about anybody else? Even the sort of, oh, I really like that person, they're a great person, and I think they're wonderful, but would I tell you there's a wee thing I just want to let you know about. Do you know that way we do it? We don't come out and slaughter the person's character. We're too deceitful to do that. We'll build them up and then we'll throw in what really is in our heart. Their feet are swift to shed blood. Well, I have never shed blood. But those who express anger, they are the same as those who shed blood, Jesus says. Because the shedding of anger is the same as shedding of blood. Ruin and misery. Peace they have not known. Is there anybody in here tonight who can say that their life has been a constant wave of joyful peace? It isn't. It isn't. There is no fear of God before their eyes. We don't really fear God. If we knew who God really, really, really is, If we understood in our hearts and our minds the reality of who God is, it would scare the living daylights out of us. We would never open our mouths again if we really grasp the reality of who God is. So these words are not speaking about some abominable, wicked individual who we would all agree is a bad person. These words are speaking about you and I. But you see, it's a truth. It's a truth that we don't like to hear. It's a truth that is clearly demonstrated in each of our lives. If you open up my heart tonight and project it on the wall behind my head where the songs were projected, you would see the reality of my heart, that it's not good. That there is deceit in there. And yet, if truth be told, I work extremely hard to be honest in what I say. In all my dealings with people, I try the best I can to be straightforward and direct. And yet the reality is that God says that my heart is deceitful above all things. And it's the same with every single solitary one of us in this building tonight. It's a truth that many of us would like to ignore, but which we can never escape from. It's a truth which many like to seek to suppress, but they cannot eradicate it. It's a truth that many people seek to deny, but they can't hide from it. Why is it that God looks at us and He sees that there is none of us who is righteous, none of us who is good, none of us who does good? Why is that the case? It's very simple. The more you find about God, the more you find that the answers are simple. It's we that make them difficult because we won't accept them. The reason why no one is good, God says, is because we all live in rebellion against Him. We will not accept the rule of God in our lives. As we saw last evening, from the moment of conception, every human being born is indelibly marred for life. Their nature is marked for life by this open, willful, deliberate, conscious, momentary, day after day, week after week, year after year rebellion against God. The sin that so inhibits the soul, the heart, and the mind. We were made in the image of God. We were made perfect. We were without sin. We were given the ability to rule and be stewards of the world and the earth that God made. We were given the unique opportunity to have a relationship with God. No other creature on the face of the earth has the relationship and the opportunity of the relationship which we have with God. And yet that responsibility to rule over all creation, to multiply and fill the earth, to delight in the relationship which God gave to us, that was broken, smashed, and shattered in an instant. As we saw last night, when God said to Adam, "Do not do, or else," Adam did, and the "or else" took place. Adam chose deliberately to reject the love and the provision of God, and instead accepted the lie of the enemy of God, who offered him a lie which sold him unto death. Oh, here we go again with Adam and Eve. "You're not going to take us back again to the Garden of Eden?" "Yes, I am." Because what happened in the Garden of Eden explains the rest of mankind and the history of the world. If you don't accept and will not humble yourself to accept what happened in the Garden of Eden and the veracity and the truthfulness of that, then you will never, ever, ever get an answer to any of these questions. Their answers are not available out with an understanding of what happened there. Because what happened at the Garden of Eden really, really did affect all mankind. You can talk about evolution all you want, but it does not address the issues on this board. You can talk and you philosophize and you can intellectualize about the history of man and the way of man, but the reality is, unless there is an acceptance of what God says, then you can never, ever, ever, ever come to an understanding of the truth. God says that. He said it in that passage that we read. No one understands. He says it in clear, black and white. And yet we turn around and say, yeah, we do understand, we're just not accepting. And you ask, well, why do children say no? As we saw last night, there is no reason. There's no answer can be given out with the reason which God gives. Why do bad things happen to good people? Because there is no one who is good. Secondly, bad people get what they deserve. Punishment. Do bad people deserve what they get? Let's go back to our flawed, broken barometer thinking. What stirs your anger when you hear about a terrible crime that's been committed? When you hear of something that has been just totally unbelievable, what a man has done to a woman, or what a man has done to a child, or what a woman has done to a man. And your reaction is what? If I could get my hands on that man. Prison's too good for him. And then, a year, 18 months later, we hear the sentence which has been passed. Life imprisonment with a recommendation that he serve a minimum of 8 years. And we get really angry again, don't we? There he has put someone in a grave. And what will he get? 8, 9, 10 years. A life sentence. He'll be out in 10 years, living his life as though nothing has happened. And we get really, really, really angry. That is, unless we feel that the liberal justice system is right in trying to make these bad people good by giving them another opportunity at life. So from our perspective, even our broken perspective of the way that we see bad and good, we, because of the image of God that's still within us, although marred, we still are of the mind that if you do bad, then you deserve what you get. You're entitled to it, you've made your choice, you've made your bed, you lie in it. From the moment of our relationship with God was smashed in the Garden of Eden, our lives, if we are going to be consistent, have deserved nothing but punishment. That open, willful, deliberate act of rebellion declared all-out war on everything that is good, perfect, and true. And when man in the form of Adam said, I will do it my way, and I will reject God's love, and I will reject God's compassion, and I will reject God's grace, and I will reject God's goodness to me. When man in his limited wisdom succumbed to the subtleties of Satan and imbibed and bought into that lie, from that moment on, because of that open rebellion against God, God is at just liberty, to execute judgment and punishment. For God not to punish would be incredible. For God not to bring judgment would be unbelievable, because it would demonstrate that he is not the holy God that he says he is. For God not to punish would be incredible, because it would show that he is an unfair individual, an unfair person, And we despise, even with our flawed barometer, we despise inconsistency, don't we? We don't like inconsistency. At least be fair with me. The facts are clear. God said to Adam, don't do it or else. And he spelled out to Adam what the or else would be. He said, if you do it, you will die. Adam did it and he tried to run away and hide because he knew he had done wrong. But you see, he couldn't, nor can we hide from God. And so when God came calling Adam and established what had happened, the only course open to a holy God was to punish Adam and all the seed of Adam, of whom you and I are one. And the result has been devastating. Devastating on mankind ever since. Male and female, young and old, you and I, there's one thing that unites us. In our nature, we all hate God. We hate God. The Bible is clear, God is holy in character, and he cannot look upon sin. But we look at a holy God, and we hate him. We hate him. We hate him with a passion. We hate him with a real, real strong vigor. There is nothing that gets us going more than the thought of a holy God dealing with us. There's something deep within our being that says, I will not have that. I will not accept it. I will not have this God speak to me. The writer of Psalm 50 says, the wicked say to God, what right have you to recite my statutes or take my covenant on your lips? This is God speaking. You hate discipline. You cast my words behind you. If you see a thief, you are pleased with him, and you keep company with adulterers. You give your mouth free rein for evil. Your tongue frames deceit. You sit and speak against your brother. You slander your own mother's son. You hate me, God says. You hate me with a passion. You hate me because I am holy. We not only hate the character of God, we hate his attributes. We hate the fact that God says, I will rule over you. One of the great pharaohs of Egypt once said, who is the Lord that I should obey his voice? And he, who is the Lord that I should, and he's not alone in that, is he? God comes and says, this is how I want you whom I have made to live your lives. I want you to worship me with all your heart, soul, and mind. I want you to put me before everything else in your life. I want you to love me. I want you to keep one day in seven for rest and worship. I don't want you loving another man's wife. I don't want you taking other people's property. I don't want you taking other people's lives. I want you to honor your parents. And God says, these are good things for you. These are things that will bless you. These are things that will bring you happiness and comfort and joy. And yet even those of us in this building today, this evening, who of us, even those of us who say we have given our hearts and souls to God, even us who say we love God with all our heart, soul, and mind, even us, do we keep them? Do we keep them? Do we say, yes, God, I'm not going to get into a shop on a Sunday again? Do we say to yes, God, I'm going to give my heart to you in everything? Do we say to God, I'm never going to speak ill of any person or anyone else again, or speak ill of you? You see, the reason why we find it so difficult to do the good things that God tells us to do, even though we know they're good for us, and even though many of us have said, yes, we believe it, Even though we've said, yes, we love God, even though we say that God is the most important being in our lives, the reason why we still do those things is because deep down we hate Him because of our sinful nature. And we will not have Him to rule over us. We hate the fact that He knows everything. We hate the fact that He loves us. We hate the fact that He does beautiful things. We grumble about the weather that He blesses us with. We hate the fact that He sent His Son to die on the cross at Calvary. I mean, think about it. God has given life to man and woman. We sent 15,000 leaflets through every home in Airdrie, Glenmavis, and a good bit of Chapel Hall. We said, come and deal and hear what God has to say about really important issues in life. Now you would think that given it is God's word, given it is truth, given the subjects that we have before us, that tonight we would be sitting in every football stadium, packed out, saying we're going to have to go somewhere bigger. We're going to have to go to Motherwell or somewhere. I don't know, where's a bigger stadium? Because everybody wants to know what God has to say. Everybody is desperate to hear what God has to say. Because God has given life. God knows all things. God is truth. God is love. God is goodness. God is holiness. God is justice. God is perfect in all His ways. Why would people not want to hear it? Do you know the reason why? Because all those good people out there tonight, they all hate Him with a vengeance. They all hate Him with a vengeance. I got an email from a man saying, can you give me an answer to this question? But I'm not going to come to any of your meetings. And I said, well, if you really want an answer to that question, then you come along to the meeting. And if you're here tonight, it's good to have you. If you're that man. But you see, the majority don't want to know. They don't want to know because they hate Him. There's only been one good man. One single, solitary, good man. And that's Jesus Christ. And all we who reject God deserve punishment. And we get our punishment. We get our punishment in this life, and we get our punishment in the next life. Now, don't go off at a tangent and think because you have an illness, I'm saying because you have that illness, God's punishing you. Just forget that nonsense, all right, for a start. But the reality is that sin does have an impact on our lives. Sin does degrade our bodies. Sin does degrade our minds. Sin does degrade our hearts and our souls. And there is a physical and a psychological and an emotional impact of sin. There is a real physical, emotional and psychological impact of sin. It is real. It's not hearsay. We often excuse it away. But the reality is there's a consequence for our sin. And that's a punishment that we bring upon ourselves because of our rebellion against God. We blame other people because that's handy. And it suits us because it makes us feel good. But the truth is, we bring it upon ourselves and we have to endure it ourselves. But that will not bring an end to it. Because there's coming a day when that punishment will be far greater. Far more strong, far, far more terrible. And it will last not for an hour, not for a week, not for a month, not even for a year, not even for a decade. It will last forever and ever. And there's only one man who has been good. That is the Son of God, Jesus Christ. And the reason why He was good, can you think why He was good from last night? He was good because He was not of the line of Adam. And since He was not of the line of Adam, then He did not have sin upon Him. And we read in the Word of God that He had no sin upon Him, nor did He commit sin during His life. So since death is a consequence of sin, Jesus Christ, who never sinned, should never have died. You and I deserve death. It's amazing that we're not wiped off the face of the earth far, far, far more earlier in our lives. It's amazing that God lets us live the length of time He does let us live. It's phenomenal that we who spit back at God and who reject His loving provision day in, day out, day in, day out, day in, day out, and rebel, even though we say we love Him, even though we say we delight in Him, yet we rebel against Him. It's amazing that God doesn't bring the shutters down in our lives and say, enough is enough. Not enough. Death is a consequence of sin. Jesus knew no sin. Jesus did no sin. There was no sin in His mouth. There was no sin in His heart. There was no sin in His mind. And yet He died. And He not only died, He took the punishment. Do you hear it? He took the punishment that was due to us for our sin upon Himself. All our rebellion, all our rejection, all our hatred of God that stored up all that punishment that we rightly deserved, if we could only see our own hearts, if we could only see our own minds, if we could see ourselves the way that God sees us, if the Spirit of God would open our eyes to see the way that He sees us, then we would look upon ourselves as the most filthy, disgusting individual that has walked the face of the earth, and we would say of ourselves, you deserve everything that's coming to you, if we could see ourselves the way God sees us. We would say of ourselves, you deserve nothing better than what you're getting. You have no right to think you will get anything better than this. And all the punishment that was due to us for that, God placed upon His Son, who never once sinned, who never once said no. And He lavished on Him. He lavished on Him that punishment. Why? Is that not the strangest thing? That those who have rebelled, rejected, hated God, God says, resistors of God. These are the words of God. Resistors of God, fighters against God. That God would say, I'm going to take those people and I'm going to bring them to Me. And I'm going to put my own son, who knows no sin, who should never experience death, I'm going to put Him to death. And He is going to take their punishment. And they are going to come from under the condemnation, and I'm going to enter into a new and living relationship with them by breaking Him. There's some really bad people in our world. Really bad people, using our barometer. I wonder how many of us would say, I'll give my son, my innocent son, as we see our sons, or I'll give my innocent daughter, and I will let that innocent child take the punishment that disgusting, vile, terrible human being deserves for all that he has done in his life or her life. And I will put them in his place. And I will bring him and all his filth and all his mind and all the dirt of his hands, and I will bring him to live with Me, and I will send my child to carry his punishment. Would we even think about it? It wouldn't even enter our heads. It wouldn't even enter our heads. And yet, you know what? That disgusting, terrible, vile, putrid human being, in the eyes of God, is exactly the same in many ways as our so-called innocent child. And any substitution we would make there would be nothing. Because they're both, in the eyes of God, sinners. And yet He gave His only Son, that if we would but believe in Him, we might be brought from under that condemnation. Why do bad things happen to good people? The answer is simple. We just find it incredibly hard to accept it. Because you see, it includes us in the equation. We are part of the equation. There's no one that's good. And everyone that's bad deserves punishment. There's present punishment and there's future punishment. There's only one good man who's ever lived who never should experience death or punishment. And yet, God lavished his wrath upon him that we might experience his love. It's incredible. It's beyond belief. It's beyond belief. Will you humble yourself and accept it by the work of the Spirit in your life? Amen.